so the man never found his arrow. Some months ago, they had heard the first whispers of an odd band of slant-eyed strangers roaming through Deathlands. The tales put these mercenaries all over the place, up in the Darks and down on the Keys, out in the Western Islands and drifting through the High Plains, and too many places too close together. Nobody traveled that fast, unless they were using the gateways. More recently, Ryan and the others had been given irrefutable proof that a gang of Japanese killers had definitely been making Matran's jumps. Indeed, there had been a confrontation with them that had left one of the samurai warriors dead and another badly injured. Now, here in the bayous, was further proof that they were active.
How long ago?
Months. Probably at least 2 months. Might be three.
So there's no danger?
No danger.
As they all turned away from the dead deer and the broken arrow, the ground around them seemed to erupt. It took Ryan a single heart-stopping moment to realize that their attackers were muties, some kind of Radzik Devil's crossbreed of scabbies and swampies. At first glance, it appeared that they were all male, their scrawny bodies streaked with mud, dappling their putrefying skin like animals that have been at the wallow. All of the seven friends had holstered their guns while they stopped to examine the samurai arrow. It had been careless, and in Deathlands, carelessness cost. The nearest swampy stabbed at Ryan with a short-hefted spear, giving him no time to use his gun. Ryan parried the thrust with the edge of his right hand, moving to one side, finding that the ground beneath his combat boots was slippery and dangerous, giving a natural advantage to the screeching swampy in front of him. A taller swampy, armed with a pair of Pudark cook's knives, had joined his comrade with a spear. He grinned at Ryan from a toothless and lipless mouth, his face pitted with running yellow sores. The muties were poor tactical fighters, eager to strike the lethal blow with no idea of team fighting. A halfway decent pair of average set men from a mid-sized vill would have had Ryan down by now. But the swampies constantly got into each other's way. Their deep-set eyes were almost hidden behind flaps of gangrenous skin. They had only one ear between them, and one mutie had lost its nose from the racing, flesh-eating rad cancer, with only a rotting hole in the center of its face, where porcine, snot-smeared hairs bristled outward. Ryan snatched a moment when the muties were snarling at each other to draw the panga from its sheath, swinging the razored 18-inch blade in a murderous blow, aiming at the newer mutie's groin. The creature tried to pull back, but the panga's edge opened up a deep gash along the top of its right thigh, blood running thickly down past the knee and puddling in the dirt. He staggered away, hopping on one leg, dropping both of his knives. Ryan was just able to bring the panga back in time to block the lunge with the spear from his second opponent. The mutie tried to strike again at him with a damaged weapon, but Ryan kicked out, snapping it into two useless pieces. Doc was near the back of the group and used the precious extra seconds this gave him to draw his rapier from its ebony sheath. Doc was getting better and better with the sword stick. He turned his wrist to lunge at the other mutie who was already falling back from the fray, trying to defend himself with a clumsy axe. The blade danced past the awkward weapon and pierced the mutie through the center of his ulcer-covered chest, sliding between the ribs and cutting open the pumping muscle of his heart.
Throw me not without good reason, and sheathe me not without honor.
The lama was now in Doc's fist and cocked while he glanced around for a suitable target. He spotted three of the mud-streaked swampies pressing Dean against a thorny bush. He stood helpless, trying to dodge the thrusts of the hunting spears that all three muties held. The hammer on the lama was set over the single shotgun chamber. Doc leveled the gun. The other muties were stunned by the concussion of the lama. Doc blinked through the cloud of powder smoke to see that the shot had starred out across 20 feet or so and taken out all three of the muties. Ryan took out the weaponless mutie and put a second 9mm round through the forehead of the man with the slashed thigh. Jack took out one of the swampies with a throwing knife, then drew his .357 Magnum. JB killed one of his attackers with the heel of his hand, jamming it up under the residual ragged nose and forcing the splintering bone and cartilage up into the unprotected front part of his brain. Christy snatched out her double-action Smith & Wesson. Mildred used the ZKR to take out the oldest of the muties with a single shot in the middle of his forehead.
Is that it? Is it over?
Everyone swung around to the left side of the dreary, blood-sodden clearing, confronting the lone man who had crept silently up on them under cover of the brief and savage firefight. He was tall, well over 6 feet, but skinny as a lath. He had long blonde hair tied in a ponytail with a scarlet ribbon. His neatly trimmed beard and mustache were white. The man's complexion was pink and rosy, setting off his piercing blue eyes. He wore buckskins, fringed across the shoulders and down both arms. Riding boots, dappled with fresh mud, reached almost to the knee.
"I swear it's the ghost of Buffalo Bill Cody."
Ryan noticed that the stranger was wearing a beautiful pair of matched navy Colts with flashy mother-of-pearl butts. A brass-hilted cavalry sword trailing on the left hip completed the ensemble. A fawn Stetson sat on his head. He swept it off with a flourish, bowing to Ryan and the others.
"An excellent performance, ladies and gentlemen. If only I had my cameras with me to record it for all posterity, I could have toured it for many a long year. Such courage, such grace under pressure. Allow me to introduce myself. My name is Johannes Ford. I make films."
The campfire sent a curling pillar of gray-white smoke circling into the evening air, filling the stillness with the scent of apple and cherry wood. An old black cauldron of gator stew hung on a tripod in the heart of the flames. The fight with the muties had been only 100 paces away from an overgrown two-lane blacktop that ran roughly from east to west. Alongside it were the remnants of an orchard, with fallen trees everywhere. Johannes Ford had led them to it, through a screen of alders to where his wag waited, a pair of bay mares chewing quietly at the long grass. His name was emblazoned on the side of the canvas, advertising his trade. Maker of films for every occasion. He stirred the stew with a ladle. The mix of vegetables and white strips of meat was simmering gently, its delicious aroma rising from the pot.
"Now, I had found myself an enormous cache of 16mm cameras with lenses and miles of film stock with several projectors and screens. It was in a tumbled barn, a country mile or so to the south of old Interstate 20, a good distance north of us here, in a small town that no longer had a name. Streets of tumbled tar paper shotgun shacks. Several houses looked like they'd once belonged to the pre-dark wealthy."
"You have old films? Big stars like Clint and Bruce and Merrill?"
"No, Dr. Wyeth. Most of that had been converted to video, and it's almost impossible to find working players these days. Last bit I saw that was nearly complete was, must be 15 years ago, up near Richmond. It had some wonderful stars in it. Jack Nicholson, Marlon Brando, Harry Dean Stanton. I have read much on the ancient movies, and they were three of the finest. Never knew the title, as the lead 10 minutes was missing. But I can lay my hand on my heart and say without hesitation that it was one of the worst movies that I have ever seen."
"You actually make what used to be called home movies, do you?"
"Yes, I do. I still have dozens of hours of film left and the equipment for developing and editing and projecting them."
"Who pays? Barons from Vills?"
"Those who can afford the money for it. Like the painters of the 18th and 19th centuries. Most of them did dull portraits of even duller people. The nobs, those who could afford the fees."
"Good to meet up with someone with a passable education. All of you got reading and writing? That's fine to know. Averageville has about a dozen readers and writers and counters, if that. Some places there's only the Baron and his family, and their tame priests."
"You got films we can see?"
"Guess so. You be interested in my doing some filming of you? Won't cost much, or we can trade. I see some of the finest blasters I ever laid eyes on."
"Not bad weapons yourself. Looks like you've had them pair of matched Navy Colts rechambered for a .38.
"Right. Sharp eyes, Mr. Dix. Would weaponry be your specialty by any chance?"
"It would."
"And you're in the trading and the traveling line, you say?"
"That's what we say. Anything beyond that falls into the box marked our business."
"Ooh, fine, fine. Forgive me for asking. Never been down this part of the world before. Sorry if I gave offense."
"Bayou folks keep open eyes and closed mouths."
"I understand, Mr. Lauren."
"Call me Jack."
"Of course. And I am Johannes, to my friends."
"Good to meet you, Johannes."
"I'm sure that the stew's ready for eating right now. Let's get to it."
Johannes Ford was a first-rate cook. The alligator tasted like the finest corn-fed chicken. The mix of vegetables, including potatoes, collard greens, and mashed rutabagas, was scented with a variety of herbs and spices, including some nutmeg that Ford measured out of a tiny glass.